Hi there, listener, and welcome to the third in our series of podcasts covering the best snow sports equipment available for winter 2025. In our first two episodes, we looked at the best skis and then the best ski boots. Today, we're going to be looking at ski jackets, and in later episodes, we're going to be looking at the best helmets, goggles, gloves, and socks. Plus, we will have a special episode about ski touring equipment. Now, before I go on, I'd like to put a shout out for Ellis Brigham. This special episode of the Ski Podcast has been made possible by them. Ellis Brigham are the winter sports specialists. They have 16 shops around the UK where you can buy all the kit you need for this winter. Alternatively, simply go to their website, ellis-brigham.com, and you can buy online now. Now, my name's Ian Martin. I'm joined today by my regular guest and equipment expert, Al Morgan. Hi, Al. How are you?
I am good, thank you, Ian. Yeah, nice to be. It's raining outside where I am currently, but nice to be talking about ski stuff and seeing the snow that's fallen a bit to Europe recently. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, times. Well, it's raining here as well, but I always think it's snowing higher up. In fact, you have been kind of out in the mountains recently. Have you just come back from Austria?
Yeah, so I was there all of last week, not skiing, unfortunately, but just looking at kit and product. Yeah, I mean, they'd had meters of snow on the peaks. The glaciers look amazing. Even pretty low down, you could see dustings of snow about the peaks, and that is really exciting.
Oh, and that a meeting you are at. I mean, today we're talking about the kit for this winter, 2024-25, but I believe you're getting a sneak preview of what's being developed for 25-26, is that right?
Yeah, 25-26, and some of the stuff for 26-27. It's always interesting this time of year because you're talking about this season's kit, but you're looking at what's coming a year or 2 years or 3 years down the line.
Yeah, well, that's pretty amazing. And I did say, have you got any secrets or any insights you can give me? But apparently, absolutely not. You have to sign a non-disclosure agreement before you can even go through the doors.
Yeah, honestly, this happens quite a lot with ski brands that you do because, yeah, they want to keep people keep shtum about it. And I understand it. You know, they spend so much time, effort, passion and money developing these products that they want to kind of keep it to themselves.
Well, listener, that is why Al is a man to listen to. He knows so much and he knows it years in advance as well. But what we're going to do today is we're going to look at the best ski jackets that are coming out this winter to give you a bit of an insight. But we're also going to tackle some of the terms and the jargon that crops up. Try and just demystify that. So if you're going into a store or if you're reading online, you can get more of an insight into what is being talked about in the particular product. And I think what we're going to do before we look at the specific jackets that Al has picked out, we're going to look at some of those terms in a bit more detail. And I guess you mentioned it's raining outside right now. Evidently, you know, all skiers hate rain, but snow is just frozen water. And so a really key part of any ski jacket has got to be waterproofing. And I just wondered, I mean, that might sound obvious what waterproofing is, but could you elaborate a little bit on what we mean by that?
I mean, you could go really dull, and waterproof is a plastic bag, you know, but they're utterly unbreathable. So ski clothing, it needs to let the moisture from our body that we produce escape, so it needs to be breathable as well. So they're very, very water resistant is the technical way of looking at it, and we can measure this. And the way that we measure it, typically it's called the hydrostatic head, and you'll see this on information about jackets, trousers, etc. So if it is this, what we will call waterproof for just simplicity through this conversation, if it's waterproof, it'll have a hydrostatic head rating. Really, you're looking at a bare minimum of 5,000 up to 20,000, so let's say 20K or more. So what this means is if you get a column of water, that's the millimeters height of water before the water starts to press through the membrane. So if it's got a hydrostatic head of 20,000, that's 20,000 millimeters high, the water column before can push the moisture through the membrane. Now, if you look at tents and things, they've got much lower hydrostatic heads and they don't need it. But the reason is with clothing, you know, we've got jackets pressing on our shoulders, we're resting on our elbows, on our knees. So the amount of pressure that we exert on the fabric, not the rain, but us doing things, that's why we have such high water resistance levels with clothing. But the higher it goes, often you get a decrease in breathability, not necessarily because costs can buy you that.
You mentioned there a number. You know, yeah. 5,000, 10,000, et cetera. If you're like looking online, is that going to be in all the kind of product details? Down if you scroll?
Absolutely. It classically is. So there's two numbers that we tend to look at. One is this waterproof rating. So hydrostatic head. Most ski clothing is a minimum of 5,000. Actually, to be classed as waterproof, inverted commas, it actually can be a lot lower than that. It's about 1,500. It's really low. But 5,000 minimum, 10,000 is pretty good. And then 20,000 and more is your upper end, more technical, far more water resistant. The other thing, when we make garments, when manufacturers put them together, it's made of different panels, and they're now some are bonded, but classically they're sewn together. And the problem is you put a needle through this membrane, it creates a hole, and water can get through that because the water droplet's smaller than the needle hole. So you have to waterproof that seam, and we call that taping. Or seam seal, tip classically, it's a strip of tape stuck on the back of it. And that isn't breathable, but it's very waterproof. So they tend nowadays to make sure the garment is as breathable as possible, make that tape very narrow. So then we talk about breathability, and it's similar numbers.
Okay, Ken, I just want to take you back and ask a couple of questions there. So, you know, waterproofing, I mean, if you were buying like an entry-level jacket, you know, people, you know, often talk about the middle of Lidl and things like that. And, you know, there can be, I appreciate some of the jackets we're going to talk about are very, very expensive.
Yeah.
And they're definitely not, you know, going to be for everyone. And if you've got, you know, kids who are growing, you know, fast, you might not want to invest in a jacket. And there are lots of like secondhand options and ways of dealing with things for your kids. But should people be tempted into, let's say, the middle of Lidl or whatever those, you know, really low entry points of the market are? Because I'm kind of thinking those jackets probably don't have any waterproofing, or are they waterproofed?
Classically, yes, they are. It depends how they make the waterproofing. So you can cover it in polyurethane, PU, coat the back of the membrane, which is quite an old way of making things waterproof. A membrane is more technical, but actually some of the more recent developments, so if you look at Futurelight from North Face, this is a nanospun PU coating, but that's very technical and very breathable. So just look at the information on the product. It will give you that rating, that hydrostatic head, and then the other thing is the breathability, because you don't want to be getting wet from the inside.
Yeah, okay, so you've mentioned a bunch of other things. Move on to those other things. You mentioned taping. So my understanding of the taping is that, you know, when you're making a jacket, you're going to have seams, and therefore that might be a bit more permeable for water. So the taping is what you do to secure those seams. Is that right? Yeah,
absolutely right. So you imagine you've got two bits of paper stuck together, and they'll have a gap down the middle. So a line of needle holes is a bit like that. Yeah, like perforations in paper. So it's holes that are big enough for the water droplets themselves to get through. So to stop that happening, we stick a completely waterproof tape on the backside, so the inside of the jacket as you look at it, to stop that water coming through. So that's absolutely right. Now you can stick it on all of the seams, which is great, because that'll stop all the water coming through. But because this tape isn't breathable, you then can stop that piece of the fabric being breathable. So you can have it fully taped, or you can just do it on the shoulders, down the outside of the arms, the bits that get wettest, and that will be called critically seam sealed or critically taped.
Okay, and the other thing you've mentioned several times is breathability. And, you know, this is vital, because like you said, you know, you could wear a bin liner or just like a waterproof bag, and you would be waterproof. The rain isn't going to get through and get you in those circumstances, but it's completely non-breathable. And the type of technologies that we're seeing with jackets now, or for a long time, they have been very breathable. So how do you kind of quantify that, and how does that impact on the price of the garment?
So the way to, when something's waterproof, so a droplet of water, the water itself is much bigger than water vapor. So think of steam versus a cup of water. Yeah, so if you've got a hole which a football can't fit through, so that'd be the football, the water droplet coming from the outside, but a ping pong ball could come through from the other side. That's the water vapor. Yeah, so much smaller to get back out through it. It can be done in various different ways when you create the garment. But we have a rating for this. The classical way is the MVTR. So we love acronyms, eh? So moisture vapor transmission rate. So this is how much the grams of water vapor that can get through a meter square of fabric every 24 hours. And the nice thing with this is it's a relatively similar number to hydrostatic head. So that water column that we spoke about would be 10,000 millimeters high. Yeah, so that 10K hydrostatic head. Classically, you will see 5 or 10K for the breathability. It could be higher, it could be 15K, depending on how that's made. So it's nice and easy to remember. You'll see in a lot of garments, it'll say 20K, 20K, or 10K, 15K, or something like that. And that's how breathable it is. Like waterproofing, the higher the number, the more breathable it is.
To most people, a breathable membrane or fabric like this is going to be Gore-Tex. That's the most famous, most well-known model of it. Is that right?
Is this like saying sellotape when it's sticky tape? Yeah, and it is. It's kind of synonymous with waterproof membranes, but there are so many out there. Some fantastic ones. You know, Dermazax by Toray, and you've got Civitex, and loads of different waterproof membranes. Brands make their own. So BD Dry or as I mentioned before, Futurelite. Various ways of doing this. But Gore-Tex has been around since the 50s in waterproof jackets since the 70s. And we're going to talk about sustainability because we always do, and I'll talk about that a bit more in there, because there have been quite a lot of developments. But yeah, Gore-Tex is a classic. People walk in a shop and ask for a Gore-Tex jacket rather than a brand. And that's just because people know it. And it works really well at keeping that water out and being breathable. But there are certainly other alternatives that can be more breathable, for example, depending on how it's constructed.
Well, constructed. That's brilliant that you use that word, actually, because my next question was going to be about the construction of the jacket. Because we have different jackets, and some of them are, you know, what people might know as a shell jacket, and some of them are insulated.
Yeah.
And confusingly, I think a shell sounds like it's not, you know, going to be as thick, but that's a three-layer jacket?
This is where it gets a bit confusing, yes. So the thinnest garments are called three-layer, and that's a shell, and the thickest, warmest garments are called two-layer. And what this layer is talking about is what is protecting the waterproof membrane. So irrespective of that construction, you have a waterproof membrane, which is great at keeping the water out, great at letting the moisture escape from the inside, but it is not very tough. So we need to protect that. So that layering is how many layers are bonded to it to protect it. So in a shell, we have a face fabric, which is the bit that's going to hit the arms of chairs and rocks and snow and things. And then we have a protective inner. This may be merino, maybe nylon. And they're all bonded together. So three layers are bonded together. That's why we call it a shell, because it's like the shell of an egg. It's just, it feels like one thin layer. And then two layer is insulated. So we have the outer protective with the waterproof membrane bonded together. But that's two layers bonded together. And then hung inside that is an insulating layer, maybe down, maybe synthetic. And then inside that, you'll just have some kind of material inside to keep everything tidy.
So you talk about how the different layers are bonded to each other. And I guess the key thing in that two layer, the shell jacket goes on the outside. You'd wear different layers underneath it. Like, for example, I'm wearing actually a Columbia Gilet at the moment. You could wear that underneath your shell jacket.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't necessarily need, unless it's particularly cold, with a kind of regular two-layer jacket, any additional layer of insulation. And that's because of the different membranes that are on the inside and that insulation itself. And they're different types of insulation.
Yeah, absolutely. So the classic is think of an old woolen jumper, yeah? Showing my age, when we used to all wear woolen jumpers. But wool's a great insulator. Down as well is a natural fibre and exceptionally good. Because of the loft amount that the down can expand and trap air, that keeps you really, really warm. But there are synthetic versions. Classic, as you think of a normal fleece, that synthetic Primaloft is, you know, that's really, really popular. But there's lots of different brands of insulation, and some may be mixed in there. It depends exactly what the brand wants to achieve. And then there's some really technical solutions now where people are using different kind of coatings to reflect infrared heat or trap warmth from the sun's rays and convert that so we're warmer. So we're seeing more technical solutions, but those having that warm layer in there, either attached to the jacket, as we say, two layer, or you have that three layer shell and you put another layer underneath.
Yeah, which you might do, for example, if I was ski touring, you know, you're going to get hot going uphill. So you want to have layers that you can kind of strip off quite easily. When you come back down again, you could be pretty cold. So like a shell jacket could work out much better in those circumstances.
Yeah, for active sports where you're going to be, your temperature can vary quite a lot. That's a brilliant way to do it, that layering. Quite a lot of ski jackets will be insulated. And if you look at racers who are in these really thin race suits going downhill very, very fast, but they want to warm up really quick, but they don't need putting on three, four, five layers. So they classically have either a down jacket or an insulated ski jacket to shove on over their race suit straight away to keep that warmth in. So it depends what you're going to be doing. If you're skiing around the resort for most of the winter, an insulated jacket can work really well. It might be a bit warm at the ends of the season, certainly in the, you know, April, when it can be a bit warmer. And if you're going to be working really hard going here, like you mentioned, ski touring is a classic. You need a shell and layering for ski touring. You're not going to do an insulated jacket and trousers because you're over.
Okay, cool. So we've talked about you know, what waterproofing means, the breathability side of things, how the jackets are constructed, the insulation side of things. A lot of the jackets have, you know, extra features. Some of them are pretty self-explanatory, like, you know, vents under the arms, etc.
Yeah.
One that we discussed last year, and I think it probably merits mentioning it now as well, is a powder skirt.
Yeah.
Which sounds like a strange feature, but do you want to just explain kind of what that is and I think maybe why it's not strictly really necessary depending
So inside the jacket around the waist, obviously you've got a hem, and normally they've got a draw cut on it, so you can cinch it in, tighten that in. Inside the jacket there's normally something with a popper closure, and it goes around your waist, and this can be attached to the trousers if you want, but it generally has a rubberized gripper, a silicone gripper. Hold on. The original concept was when you're skiing powder snow, that light powder snow, fluffing up through the bottom of the jacket, this powder ski, as it's termed, is to stop that snow coming up underneath. In practice, I've skied with powder skates, without them. Does it make a difference? I would argue not for powder. And besides, if you're going to be skiing off-piste, really, you need a backpack on with a shovel, a probe, and you're going to have a transceiver on. So you got the waist belt off that backpack anyway, which is going to pull all the jacket in, so you don't need the powder skate. What it is brilliant for is trapping warmth in, and lots of jackets in the sleeves by the wrist have what looks a bit like a mini powder skate for your wrist, or an internal stretchy wrist gaiter, which you can put your thumb in, and that again is a brilliant way. You put that on, put your hands in your gloves, that's a lovely way of trapping that warmth in.
Actually, and you mentioned going off piste there, backcountry, etc. There's another feature that I don't know if all jackets have it these days. It certainly seemed to be that it was only a few, and now a lot more of them have it. Something called Reco. I wondered if you could just explain what Reco is and, you know, the context where it might be useful.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's been around for a long time. So Reco is a passive device. Think of it as a reflector. You can have it to stick onto things. So obviously it's built in helmets, trousers, jackets. You can have loads of them around your body. That doesn't hugely matter. So if you unfortunately get caught in an avalanche, or if you get lost in the resort, because these are useful in the summer as well, the rescue teams, because the device that they have is really quite big, so they can fly over in a helicopter and ping a signal to bounce back off the Reco to try and locate somebody. So it's a really good, quick way of trying to locate somebody. And then teams might go in with transceivers. And not all jackets have them, absolutely not. But especially technical jackets for off-piste, they can have them, and resort jackets often have them, because it's a bit of a selling feature. Want to make very, very clear is if you're going to go skiing off-piste, take a transceiver with you. Reco or no Reco, doesn't matter. You must take a transceiver, take a shovel, take a probe, and know how to use them. Many resorts have practice areas, but yeah, that's my safety talk out of the way. But the Reco is not a replacement for a transceiver, but it is very, very useful.
Yeah, I mean, a Reco can help you be found, but if you were skiing, you know, off piste and one of your party ended up in an avalanche,
yeah,
it's not going to help you find them, which transceiver is, and there are various other reasons. We'll probably tackle that maybe more in the ski touring episode. Okay, you mentioned sustainability and, you know, some of the changes we've had with sustainability. And, you know, we see a lot of this innovation, you know, every year. What are the sort of trends that we're seeing this year in terms of jackets?
It's a kind of year-on-year progression for a lot of things. So there's loads of recycled materials, which is fantastic. Face fabrics, inner fabrics, and repurposed. So offcuts from the manufacturing process of other items can be used in clothing and jackets and pants, which is absolutely brilliant. And we'll see more and more brands offer repairsives, as Arc'teryx, Patagonia Classics, Picture Organic Clothing, the same thing. You know, they offer repair services, so that's another way of keeping things in use for longer, so that really works for sustainability. One of the main ones, so Gore-Tex that we spoke about before, since the 50s, when it was used for other industries, and since the 70s for jackets, it has been made of something called EPTFE, so expanded polytetrafluoroethylene. And what industries are doing now is moving away from these perfluorinated compounds, so which we'll call PFCs, and it gets called PFAs. About 2 years ago, 2022, Gore-Tex and Patagonia came out with a jacket using EPA. Great. It was the only one at the time. In the last season, we saw a few more. And what is absolutely brilliant is we are seeing so many brands now using this expanded polyethylene membrane. Whatever the membrane is used, jackets normally have a treatment on the outside called a durable water repellent coating, DWR. And they've moved away from having these PFCs, these perfluorinated compounds in it, which is brilliant. And EPE, this Gore-Tex version, it still comes with Gore-Tex's guarantee to keep you dry guarantee. It's breathable. yeah, it's fantastic. Some of the garments that we will talk about use EPE, but the brilliant thing is that more and more brands are using it. And then the other piece, which is really, really exciting, because that's making things better at that end, but what happens at the end of life? Jackets are made of loads of different materials. It's very hard to separate those and then recycle them. So we've seen it in kind of outdoor clothing with the likes of Halti and some of their kind of more outdoor clothing. But what we are seeing now, if we look at somebody like Peak Performance, they have an insulated hoodie, the Elevate Liner hoodie. We call this mono material. So almost all of that is made from one material group, so polyester in this case. And there's other brands doing it in different ways. And even silly things like on that hoodie, it's an insulated hoodie. It's not an outerwear waterproof thing necessarily. But the zipper slider, if you break that, you can put another one out without having to replace the zipper. It's absolutely brilliant. I've done it. I've played with it quite a bit. So even just sensible decisions like that can make a garment stay in use for so much longer.
Okay, excellent. You covered a lot of points there. So just to clarify, what I understand from that is that all the brands are moving away as much as they can from PFCs. And
yeah.
PFC in simple terms, am I right in saying that these are like forever plastics
yeah,
get into
yeah.
the system?
Yeah.
And, we read about, in the ocean or the top of Everest, etc., we have these tiny little balls of plastic.
So these are compounds that persist in the environment for a very, very long time. Some of them we don't actually know how long. And it's those ones of environmental concern that are the main ones.
And then the second point you're making there is that items are much easier to recycle at end of life, which is a really important point to it as well. You mentioned repair earlier. And actually, this is something I definitely want to bring up, because anyone who listened to episode 218 of the podcast, in that episode, I interviewed Dominic Showers from Arc'teryx.
Yeah.
I talked to her about their Rebirth program. And one of the reasons was, I went along to their store in Covent Garden where they have a repair shop. And yeah, Patagonia have had these repair shops. And I think a lot more companies are introducing these repair shops where you can take along that brand and they'll do some repairs for you. And as it goes, last week I took an Arc'teryx shell jacket that I have where the waterproofing, just wasn't working anymore down there. And I'm just so impressed with the service. I really wanted to kind of bring it up. But basically, they took it off me, they washed it, and they retreated it with non-PFC DWR, durable water repellent. And now, actually, I haven't been out in the rain yet. I should probably just go out there today and try it out. But we're seeing more and more brands introduce these kind of repair services, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Which is fantastic because, we want to keep the garments in use as long as possible. Going back to your point, first of all, how cool is that downstairs? You know, they've got a separate room with washing machines and then they can wash it and dry it for you and treat it. Absolutely. People do not realize about cleaning their garments. These are technical pieces of clothing. So you've got to keep the pores open. You have to clean it. Do not just go and chuck it in with your normal laundry because washing detergent can block those pores. It's not as good for it. So get a specific washer. There are loads of different brands out there. For years, I've just used Nikwax because that's what I use. But there are loads of alternatives that you can use. And it is astounding the difference that it makes when you properly wash and reproof. So we're talking about this durable water repellency of the garment. And you should actually do it every 4 or 5 uses. So if you're using that garment every day for a week, come back from a ski holiday, wash it, reproof it. You have to do it a lot more regularly than people think. And it makes a massive difference to how well it performs and how long it lasts.
I mean, that is really interesting because part of that Rebirth project from Arc'teryx is there's a section of it called Recare, and it's literally about consumer education. And I, to be honest with you, when I took that jacket in, they said, when did you last wash it? I've like never washed it. That probably didn't help.
But there's I think it's University of Manchester. Quite a while ago, I went to a talk by one of the professors and they do material science and they were looking at this. It's actually about 5 hours of use and then you want to redo it. That's amazing because I can ski for 8 hours in a day. Being practical, a week's use if you're going to, and then reproof it. But people will have a jacket at home, a walking jacket or a ski jacket they might use through the summer, never wash it and reproof it. And then it wets out. And the problem that you get in wetting out, it's not that the water comes through the membrane. When that face fabric is wetted out, the garment cannot breathe. And it's incredible how much moisture our body produces. So you wet out from the inside of the That's why we need to replenish that DWR treatment.
I think there's a lot of developments in terms of extending the life of a garment, whether it's by using better materials in the first place or that end of life, making it easier to recycle them. And, a point that we've made several times is that the most sustainable garment, the most sustainable item in your wardrobe, it is the one that you already have. All of those points being made, if you are in the market this year and it is time to get a new ski jacket, the point of this episode is to look at some of the best new ski jackets available for winter 2025. And the reason we have you on, Al, is because you know so much about them. So let's get into the meat of the issue. What is your first choice for this winter?
I just want to be clear, there were so many good garments. There were, I test a lot of clothing, and this list could be so long. So we picked different price points from what feels to me is very expensive through to something a bit more palatable and might fit my budget, but they all perform brilliantly well. So at the top end, so there's a Japanese company called Descente, D-E-S-C-E-N-T-E. People will think it's French, but it's a Japanese company. They've been around for a long time, make race suits, been involved in various sports, but really they started in skiing. And it's pretty new to the UK. We're talking about insulated pieces. This is a woman's jacket. And we're talking about seams before, but a lot of the seams on this aren't sewn. These are bonded. So this is called the Descente Woman's Welded Down Jacket. Now, deep breath, it's £789. But it's amazing. I mean, it's so warm. The fit on it is fantastic. It doesn't look like a crazy, just technical, going to go and stand out in the rain jacket. It looks beautiful, really tall, warm collar. It has all of the ski features. And then this is also one of those jackets where they use that technology that I was talking about, interacting with the sun's rays to give you more warmth. So they call it Heat Navi Tech. And they think, or this is their claim, is that this makes it about 5 degrees warmer without putting more insulation in it. But this jacket looks fantastic. It uses Dermazax waterproof membrane. It's not completely taped, but the critical seams are taped. And as I say, a lot of the seams are bonded anyway, so you don't have all those little holes to worry about so much. And the other beautiful thing about them being bonded, because down can get out through stitch holes, you don't shed as much down in this, which is great when you pay the best part of £800 for the jacket. You don't want to lose the insulation, but it is rather beautiful. And the white color, it's a natural color, so it's more eco-friendly if you want. They're not having used dyes in that.
That's a huge amount of money for a jacket. It's part of the reason for that price point, because it's using down specifically.
It's just a really technically developed jacket. The cut and the fit of it looks and feels expensive. So some of it is just all of the tailoring in that. Down can add to the cost, absolutely. But Descente is a premium brand, classically. Yeah, so they make upper end products. You look at some of their base layers and things, it's amazing what they've been able to achieve.
Yeah. Well, apart from anything else, educational to discover that Descente is actually a Japanese brand and not a French one, which I had always assumed.
Right, okay.
Okay, what's number two on your list then, Al?
So stepping down just over £100 to £630 to make a men's and a woman's version. North Face has a technical end of their clothing. And this range is called Summit, and they have it for different sports. So this is the men's Summit Verbier Gore-Tex jacket. And I think we may have actually covered the ladies last season. But this is in again because it is absolutely brilliant. I love the long cut of the jacket. It is longer than many. It has a really tall collar, which on those real blower days, this is a shell jacket. It's Gore-Tex. Gore-Tex don't talk about their hydrostatic head and breathability rating, but they do have, as I mentioned, they're guaranteed to keep you dry. Monica just stating that, it's going to keep all that moisture. And it is very, very waterproof. But the cut and feel of it, really nice big front pockets. If you're wearing a harness, if you're going technical, ski touring or mountaineering, free ride skiing, or you're wearing a backpack when you're off piece in that waist belt, you don't want pockets down by the waist belt. So the pockets are nice and high. Just a brilliant cut. I love the, you can get it in black, but they've got a really nice bright kind of greeny colorway, which I really like. They've got the women's two matching bib pants, big hood that you can put over your helmet. If you're going free ride skiing, the cut and freedom in this and just how tough it feels and seems to be on the mountain. I'm not using this for years and years and years. Yeah, it's a great freeride jacket. Summit Verbier. Yeah, I've had it for a while, but it is brilliant and deserves a place in this list.
Okay, excellent. And I take it you've tested that one out in the mountain somewhere, have you?
Yes, yeah. So all these pieces are played with in some way. And it's brilliant. So I get the opportunity out in La Clusa, ride the outfits from lots of different brands in Scotland where it's often quite miserable and wet, so it's a brilliant test for it. And in the UK, often I'll test these bits in summer months as well as in winter to see how, because there's no point just having a jacket that you're going to use for 1 week of the year. That's sustainably, that's terrible. So I want to see how it works year round. So these things get tested a lot.
Yeah, and just to clarify, listener, if you haven't listened to our previous episodes, which you evidently should do, on the skis and ski boots, I think we mentioned it there, but when Al talks about Macluza, that is the SIGB, Snow Sports Industry Appropriate and Ski Test.
Correct.
Which is for the industry where Al leads the full line team there and does all the reviewing for full line.
Yes.
Okay, what's number three on your list, Al?
Yeah, so jumping down again about around another £100, so £539. So this is another ladies' ski jacket. This is the Henry Duvillard Women's Alicia ski jacket, 20K, 20K membrane. Now, if you paid attention earlier on, that'll give you an idea that it's got a hydrostatic head of 20,000 millimeters and you got 20,000 grams per meter squared per 24 hours breathability. But yeah, 20K, 20K. But like the Descente, it's not fully taped, it's critically taped. But this jacket, it's so flattering in its shape and design. And, you know, often I'll talk about technical pieces of clothing, but often people want to look really, really good when they're out skiing, myself included. You know, we all think about how we look, what our goggles, helmets, gloves, jacket, outfit all look like. And this looks amazing. Really nice color blocking. It does have what looks to be fur around the hood, but it's not. It's fake fur, faux fur, and you can remove that. So you just have the insulated hood if you want, or you can take the whole hood off. Again, you've got all the normal ski-specific features in there, but it is so flattering. If you go in a shop, try this on. It looks amazing.
Okay, and quick question there. You said it was critically taped. What does that mean?
Yeah, so they're taping, say, over the shoulder and down the outside of the arms. But the side of the jacket that's protected by arms and it's not going to get as much water on it may not be taped. So it depends specifically on the jacket, but critically taped is talking about the seams where rucksack straps lie, or you're going to put pressure on your elbows on, say, on a chairlift or when you're sat at a table outside a restaurant, that kind of thing, or when you're sat on the ground. So critically taped means not everything is taped, but the areas that are most susceptible to letting moisture through will have tape.
And you picked this, you know, it's specifically a women's jacket. And I'm guessing because of the cut, you probably haven't worn it yourself. So a lot of what you're thinking of here is feedback from the testers that you work with.
Yeah, so I work with some amazing female testers as well. I do put women's clothing on. I want to see what the cut like, what the freedom is like. I haven't skied in this jacket, but yes, for Four Line, we have a team of, it changes each year, but 10, 14 skiers. So, and a pretty equal split of men and women. So we can test a lot of product and we do it year round. Some of these guys live in the mountains and we can get through a lot of kit.
Oh, okay. That's really interesting. Now, next on your list, I've seen your choices already. I think probably every listener will have heard of Patagonia and it cropped up when we talk about sustainability, but it's a Patagonia jacket, your fourth choice.
I've tested a lot of Patagonia outfits for this season. I've got a new one called Untracked, which is a shell, but we spoke about the Verbier Summit. That's a shell. This is, and obviously we've spoken about the Henri Duvillard one, which are insulated. So this is very, very lightly insulated. And when I spoke about Gore-Tex changing to this expanded polyethylene, this EPE, this was the first jacket they brought out with it. And still in the line. The reason that I've put it in is they've got a new insulated version of it, which is brilliant. But this has got a fleece lining in it. It's two layer. It uses Gore EPE. It's PFC free. So Patagonia try and make things as environmentally friendly as possible. But this fleece in it is in a zigzag pattern. So it's got like kind of channels and then little bits of fleece down it. But it just gives a brilliant blend of breathability because the moisture can move around in these channels in the fleece. And it gives you a little bit of insulation. So as a year-round jacket, it works fantastically well. To skiing, you don't overheat in it. I have toured in it as well, so you don't get too hot. It's exceptionally tough. I've given it proper battering, and the pants, and they just seem really, really durable. £449, the women's version and the men's version, available in various colours, and it just works superbly well. I love the pockets at the front are nice and high, like I spoke of with the North Face jacket. Keep out of the way of that rucksack strap. The powder skirt, which we spoke about earlier, the inside isn't as big and bulky as many. It's much slimmer, but it's got a really grippy rubber hem to that powder skirt. And you can pop the front of it out of the way. And even with that, it still holds on. It still keeps that warmth in, but you can keep it up. You know, you don't have to fasten it, all the time. Or you can do it up nice and snug around you. So, yeah, the Storm Shift's been in their range a while, but I've used it season after season, and it works across the whole winter without you overheating on those warmer days. Really versatile, use it year round. And for £449, given how widely you can use this jacket, it's a great choice.
Right. Okay. That one sounds really interesting. And just to clarify then, proving that I listened to what you were saying earlier, this is EPE,
yes,
which is that Gore-Tex layer that uses no PFAs,
PFAs, and absolutely right. And actually, so one of our testers, Amy Marwick, who I think you might have spoken to previously, we came together in Patagonia kit, and one of her comments was just how cool you feel. I think she might have been in the Untracked at the time, but I know I've skied with her in the Storm Shift as well. And it does, you know, it has that cut and that feel in it. It's brilliant.
I mean, there is
a lot of brand loyalty, I would say, towards Patagonia, because evidently they stand, I guess, at the forefront of brands in terms of their positioning for sustainability in relation to, I don't think we need to go into it now, but how the company is formulated in that their profits go towards environmental causes as of, I think, maybe 2 years ago now or a year ago, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it is very, can I use the term on trend? But you know what I mean? Sustainability is such a big topic at the minute, and Patagonia have been doing it for a long time. This is not something they've just moved into to grab headlines or anything. They've been at the forefront of this, pushing it forwards. The beauty is, and as we've spoken of with equipment, we're getting this improved sustainability, and the kit is performing, and that is fab.
And that actually leads us on quite nicely to the fifth in your list, which is from Picture. And I think the full name of that brand is Picture Organic, isn't it?
Because they Picture also Organic make clothing. Absolutely right. Yeah, so again, a massive, you know, sustainability is one of the key pillars of how they develop their products, how they operate as a business. They don't just work in snow sports, but they make a lot of superb ski and snowboard kit. And this is a ladies jacket. So this is called the Haakon, HAAKON, £350. Again, PFC DWR treatment. It's a 20K jacket. So we're looking at a more palatable price point in 350, but it's still got that really high rating, fully taped, really technical. It is insulated, but as I spoke of with the Patagonia piece, this is light insulation, which keeps it really versatile across the season. You know, with the Descente, which is brilliant and it is expensive, would I use it on a blisteringly hot spring day? Probably not. I mean, that Descente has a fantastic zip down the front. It's got two zips and you can open one, let air come all the way through the front panel. But there's less insulation in this Picture women's Haakon jacket, and that adds to its versatility. Loads of snowsport features, nice little touches. What's lovely is they do this amazing silk green orchard or something. The colour name is quite long, but it's very, very bright colourway. And I love this when you're in the mountains, having that bit of pop makes it easy for your family and friends to find you, and it looks sensational.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that sounds great. And actually, I have previously interviewed Picture Organic in relation to their sustainability. I'll stick a link into the show notes in relation to that. Now, regular listeners will know that every single episode, we've been having a recommendation from Ellis Brigham themselves. And for this episode, Harry Cavill, who is one of the ski wear buyers at Ellis Brigham, has sent in her pick. If you listen to the podcast right now, I'll drop it in.
Hi, my name's Harry and I am part of the ski wear buying team at Ellis Brigham. My favourite jacket going into the season is the Porter jacket by a Dutch brand called Goldberg. Now, Goldberg on the grand scheme of ski wear hasn't actually been around that long. It was established in 2009 by two very fabulous Dutch best friends who were frustrated that to achieve that high fashion look on the mountains, you also had to pay high fashion prices. So they got their heads together with a lot of experience between them, one being a sportswear designer and the other one having a very successful shop. And they established Goldberg. Now, it's gone from strength to strength over that time and built a very strong reputation for itself in the ski world. Now, the Porter jacket is, I mean, to be honest, I could pick many of their jackets to be my favourite, but the Porter jacket I particularly love because it's got this short silhouette with a very generous collar that comes kind of right up over your chin, over your lips, so you get that cosy feeling when you're on a chairlift. I also think that whole very high neck screams Princess Diana, on, you know, and those iconic photos back on the mountain. It's just so chic. But that luxurious style is not only makes you feel fabulous and looks fabulous, but it is made with really premium materials. I like to call it all the F's. It's got the fit, it's got the fabric, it's got the features. And that is just, you know, a harmonious blend of functionality and fashion. The other great thing is it comes in a range of colours that can be great on the mountain, but also really functional for wearing back home and getting, you know, more use out of it. The Porter jacket and actually Goldberg as a brand on a whole have absolutely nailed this diversity of being appealing to many, many different women. So you'll see Goldberg in very, very high-end ski resorts, in beautiful après-ski settings with somebody sipping the most fabulous champagne. And you'll also see it on much younger ladies on more affordable holidays. So they've nailed exactly what they were out to establish of creating this chic, versatile outerwear option for ladies from all walks of life that can look incredibly Instagrammable if that's what they're after, but also have a product that is made really well and feels amazing to ski in. So for that reason, without a shadow of a doubt, this year, my favourite ski jacket is the Porter jacket by Goldberg.
And if you're watching on YouTube, I can tell you that Harry picked the Goldberg women's Porter jacket. Do you know this one, Al?
Yeah, so actually it's probably similar in its look and feel to the Descente, really. You know, that big kind of puffy style jacket. It's a much shorter cut, still got that really warm hood. Goldberg has a really strong following. I was talking to people from the Netherlands last week, interestingly, and it's massive. Goldberg's huge there. They do collabs with skis and things. It's not as big in the UK, but if you want that real, almost couture look, it's sensational. Not my kind of jacket. I look a bit silly, it's quite short. But you don't look like you're going to go and watch aeroplanes all day when you're wearing it.
Do you happen to know what the price point is on that one?
It's mid-500s. I think it's about £530.
Okay, excellent. Well, there'll be a link to that in the show notes. Okay, that's brilliant. Well, I would like to thank Ellis Brigham because this episode of the Ski Podcast has been made possible by them. Just as a reminder, there are 16 shops around the UK. You can find all their kit at ellis-brigham.com, where you can buy online now. We're going to move towards a close now. I enjoy all feedback about this show. I'd like to know what you think, listener. You can tell us by social at Ski Podcast or by email, theskipodcast@gmail.com. We have had some feedback already on some of our previous equipment episodes. Chalets Direct, I guess that's a company rather than a person. They were talking about the ski episode and they said, very good overview of the design and material technology of the latest skis, how they perform on the mountain. Fun to listen to as well. So thank you for that. I should point out that all of our equipment episodes are being published on YouTube on the Skipedia channel. So you can find us there. If you want to see Al and myself, as well as hear us, you can catch up with us there. Plus, there's loads of other videos on there as well about ranging from train travels, snow reports, interviews, features to do with the ski industry. On YouTube, one of our viewers, Enderbunker2650, said, custom boot fitters sometimes focus on what they have in stock rather than a boot the client may have been interested in. Now, I did kind of reply to that, but I don't know what you think about this, Al. I think it's kind of self-evident they probably would focus on something they've got in stock. You know, if you took like your own boot into a boot fitter, custom boot fitter, would they be able to help you with that as well?
Yeah, you'll have to pay for it, classically. If you did buy a boot online or somebody gave you a boot, if a friend gave you a boot and you need to get it fitted, you can generally go in a store and get it customized to you, but that'll cost money. It's always an interesting one when we're reviewing and testing boots and letting people know about boots, because at the end of the day, I'd almost go ignore everything I say, go and talk to a boot fitter and get the boot that fits your foot. Kind of doing myself have a job there. So features, obviously, that is important, but fit is king. It's always king. So it's to do with what's going to work best for your foot, ankle and leg and your skiing.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. One other comment I'm going to include in this one, more a general one from Chris Bristol on the Snowheads website. He said, thanks, Ian, enjoying the podcast. So thank you, Chris, for that.
Of course, there are three things you can do to help. You can review us
on Apple Podcasts or leave a message on Spotify, which I've been really enjoying reading some of those. You can subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you do like the podcast and you think someone else might find it interesting, particularly these episodes about equipment, just share it with your friends. Now, we now have 230 episodes of the podcast to catch up with. I had a look earlier and 153 of those were listened to in the last week. There is so much to listen to in our back catalogue. Just have a look around the tags and categories and you're bound to find something of interest to you. Now, you can follow me at Skipedia and the podcast at Ski Podcast. But for now, I would like to thank Ellis Brigham for sponsoring the show. And Al, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Ian. Honestly, these are fun.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, every year I learn something more.
So we'll be back with our fourth equipment episode. Next time, we're going to be focusing on the best goggles and helmets, and that will come out on the 8th of November. But finally, listener, thank you for joining us. And until next time, goodbye.